You're listening to Artbeck on 95 BFM.
Just before the break, that was Kate Le Bon, and after that, Donny Benet with Le Piano. If you're just tuning in, we're going to have our second interview of this morning coming up in just a moment. I am speaking to Frances Samuel, a poet who has just published her second collection of poetry, Museum, with Te Haranga Waka University Press. And the blurb that accompanies this title reads, "For many years, poet Frances Samuel worked at a museum writing the text for exhibitions. In her new book, she redefines the notion of a museum, making it infinite and wild. Like freewheeling thought experiments, Samuel's poems blur the lines between material and immaterial, natural and supernatural, to funny and surreal effect. Objects of significance include water bears and tornadoes, ancient penguins and robots, and a paper-cut skeleton that walks off the page. In this book, a museum is the air itself and the idea that everything we love survives. The result is continually surprising, intimate, and imaginative." And poet Jenny Bornholt said, "Frances Samuel's museum is full of wonders. It's a storehouse of words, objects, feelings at once strange and marvelous." So I had the pleasure of speaking to Frances earlier in the week, and I'm going to play that interview now. Here's part one. I thought it would be good to start in a relatively pragmatic way by asking how you approach writing, whether you write a piece in one sitting, or do you chip away at a poem over a series of days, kind of adding to it as you think it over?
This book I wrote in pretty thin crescents of time because I have a family and a day job, and so like most people I'm not usually able to spend long blocks of time writing, but generally when I sit down to write a poem, I start with a first line. I just have quite a strong idea for that first line, and then I keep writing and I follow that line and just see what happens. So some of the shorter poems in Museum are pretty much written in one sitting with kind of minor revisions later on, but others I moved the stanzas around quite a bit, and you know, removed some lines or words and added others. So like you said, sort of more of a building kind of process. And I like how that word stanza, it means room, because it is as if I need to get the shape of the house quite quickly in the first draft. Like you said, it's quite, you know, focused and have a strong beginning and a strong ending, and I have to get the sense of the poem and the direction. But then I can then spend more time getting the rooms, the stanzas and the right flow within that with that house. In all the poems I do revisit and revise over time, and that's pretty much, you know, it's months or sometimes even years. Like for all poets, there are a lot of poems that have great parts to them, but somehow as a whole they never quite work out, you have to put them aside so they don't make it into a book.
You can just turn over a sentence in the back of your mind for a long time.
Yeah, and I found even right up until the book was being published, I was still, tweaking things here and there.
You wrote the collection drawing from your experience working at a museum, and that's the thematic connection between all the different pieces, some more loosely than others. How many of these poems were written while you were working there, and how many were written after?
All of them were written while I was working there.
Some of them are so specifically connected to exhibitions that will be familiar to anyone who's been to the museum you worked at.
Te Papa.
You were writing exhibition texts, and you did this for a number of years. How did writing for a general audience, and that includes children and often writing about expert subjects for non-experts, how did that inform your writing as a poet?
Yeah, writing exhibition texts, it's definitely a poetry adjacent kind of line of work. Wall labels and digital text they're short and every word matters, and you're condensing that story and telling it in an interesting way. So I think being a poet definitely helped and informed the way I developed the storylines and wrote the exhibition text. But it wasn't vice versa. So I wouldn't say that exhibition writing has influenced kind of the style of my poetry. But yeah, it's as you were talking about, when you're talking about filing things away, like what working at the museum did inform was the inspiration for many of the poems in the book. So Te Papa, I was writing across really diverse subject areas, from te tāio nature to toy art. There were iwi exhibitions, fashion, history, and often little details would catch my imagination and I'd just note them down in whatever notebook I had. But yeah, what I find interesting though is that the things I suspected might end up in a poem, you know, like the fact that a massive humpback whale can whisper, it whispers warnings to its baby that there's sharks around, you know, or the fact that, you know, the yellow robes of monks have to be dyed using six particular plants. Those things ended up in poems, you know, as did an ancient colossal penguin. But yeah, then there were other things that I didn't think would surface, you know, from my subconscious, like deep sea scale worms or the parasites that lived in the feathers of moa or robots. Yeah, I wasn't really expecting those to make their way into poems.
There's kind of a quality of magic to a number of the poems, and it's funny because they do seem as a reader to be often the details that are pulled directly from life. How do you feel about the museum as a whimsical subject?
I think museums as places and as institutions, they can be really powerful and transformative for people and for communities. And they can have that effect through conventional displays of objects and text. But they also increasingly, I think more and more now, they do that by being playful and interactive and sensory. And I think that's probably similar for the poems in this book. So they have playful and amusing elements, you know, that could be described as whimsical, but within that there are other kind of deeper things going on as well.
There's this poem, Life Drawing Class, that begins, the book said if you wanted a cow, you drew the cow, and if you wanted the milk, you drew the milk. And I thought that was quite funny because since you have this frame of the museum, it is, you know, it's in the back of my mind while I'm reading it, and just thinking about how museums try and create interaction with the public, and often for art museums, that is life drawing classes. But, you know, if you go to toy art, you're not going to see a huge amount of life drawing. And another element, which is quite prominent, particularly in the first half, are social relationships that form in the museum. If there is this quality of magic to a museum in certain ways, how does that relate to your experience of it as an employee?
You're always working with such interesting material at the museum. The content is quite fascinating, and also there's, you know, it's quite a fast turnover, so you're working on different exhibitions in succession, or, you know, even all at once. So I think there is still a magical quality to working there, because it's like you know, it's like a creative team coming together for this common goal, you know, which is, you know, the opening of the exhibition. And it's exciting when the exhibition opens.
Everyone who works there wants to work there because they're interested in the material that the museum holds.
You know, museum people are very passionate about what they do, and it's quite vocational, I think, in a sense. So, yeah, there's definitely real museum professionals. And it's such a kind of a multifaceted sort of international kind of subject, so which is changing all the time. Like, museums are really quite different, at such different spaces to what they used to be 20 years ago. So there's always lots of new thought going into what you're doing and what you're applying to the exhibition, and, you know, how we're writing the text and how that's presented, and what is the visitor experience going to be walking through the space and the things that they encounter. So, yeah, it's really dynamic in that kind of way.
That was Frances Samuel speaking about her poetry collection Museum, her second poetry collection, which has just come out from Te Haranga Waka University Press. And we're going to have some more of that interview in just a moment after a track from Eden Burns and Christopher Tubbs. This is MOJ. We'll be right back.
Jazz.
So that lovely track was M.O.J. by Eden Burns and Christopher Tubbs. Yeah, really nice, mallow beat there. We're going to jump into part two of my conversation with Francis Samuel now. If you're just tuning in, we are talking about Francis's new poetry collection, Museum, out from Te Haranga Waka University Press. We've been talking about the museum as an institution, but there is this strong thread of emotion and quite individual emotion. A lot of the pieces are written from a first-person perspective where they say, you know, my or I. When you write a first-person pronoun, is it fair to read that as you?
In the book, I think there are quite a small number of poems where I'm the narrator in an autobiographical sense. Still probably never completely, but overall when I'm using the I and the you, those are universal. I think that's probably pretty much the same for most poetry. It's written for anybody and everybody. So even if I'm using the I, might still resonate with the reader and they'll find themselves within that.
And in a kind of related way, how do you think a reader's experience of the collection will be informed by their familiarity with the specifics of Te Papa?
As a reader, you don't have to have been to Te Papa or any other museum, or actually even have an interest in museums to enjoy the book or for some of the poems to resonate with you. I think actually my editor, who's the poet Ashley Young, she captured it well in her blurb. She said, the book is like reimagining the notion of a museum and, making it as a kind of infinite and wild space. And so I like how that kind of reassures the reader, you know, that they're not having to deal with a literal museum in any sense or bring any background knowledge. But you're thinking about it, if you were to go to Te Papa, you'd see the tsunami tank that's in one of the poems, and the ice core video, and you know, some of the deep sea creatures, mana whenua, whakaero, and other things that appear in the poems. But actually seeing those things isn't important to the reading of the poems.
When you were beginning to collect the pieces you've been writing into a book, was the museological theme just immediately, you know, right there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea came from probably just someone who said, oh, you know, I guess you've got lots of poems about the museum. And I remember, you know, and they said, oh, they'd be interested in reading those. And I thought, oh, you know, maybe I do. And I kind of realized when I looked at what I had, you know, my drafts of my poems around the place, I saw that there was, you know, there was a museum theme coming through. And that's when the title came to me, and it came to me quite definitely. And in a way, it's, you know, it's probably a bit of a risky title because, I have kind of really, you know, sort of majestic associations with museums and their potential. But, you know, for other people, their spaces, which, you know, might mean they're kind of got tired legs and glazed eyes and, you know, a bit of dust. I think that the title does seem to be having the resonance maybe that I wanted it to. But so once I saw that I had, you know, I could sort of see these this theme of the museum emerging in my work, and I decided to put it together in a book. The book is in three parts, was kind of collecting the poems together a bit more by kind of subject, or almost like a museum collection. So the parts are, there's supernatural world, so it's natural world, but then in front of it, it's super in brackets, so it can be read either way. Immaterial world and object lessons, so those were the loose themes. So in supernatural world, it's mainly environmental phenomena, so cacti, bees, lightning, tornadoes, while in material world, there are poems about colour, shoes, paintings, photography, pottery. And yeah, so the spark or the inspiration for many of them directly or indirectly links to a museum exhibition or collection, and therefore the title. But you're right that all of the poems then take off in all kinds of directions that are not necessarily museum-y at all. So yeah, while the book is called Museum, it's probably more museum infused kind of rather than based on.
There's one early in the collection that begins with a water bear being viewed on a glass slide,
yeah,
and then kind of follows outside of that observation room, and yeah, just you expand out from these details that it feels like have caught your attention just in a day-to-day work environment.
There's that spark there, you know, which might be the object or an idea or some information, you know, from an exhibition or a collection, but then yeah, it just goes off in all sorts of different directions. So
you also use quotation, which is something that I thought had the overtures of a museum, and I was wondering if that was intentional or if I'm misreading that.
I am a person who jots down quotes and passages from books, you know, usually if I feel like they kind of express the essence of something, or they, you know, offer a kind of revelation or help me understand something better. And and as you notice, fragments of those do weave their way into the poems, and often an exhibition text you'll use quotes because they are such a great way of summing up a theme or capturing a voice or an idea. But in my work, although in some ways maybe using them to similar effect, by using quotes I'm not really making a link between poetry and anything museological.
Yeah, I really liked the quotes. That feels like, as a theme of the collection as a whole, it allows you to really encompass a huge range of time and space and touch on it on many different subjects. And in terms of very broad questions, are you interested in creation in a process sense, in a religious sense, and in a cosmological sense?
Yeah, a number of the poems do sweep through time and space, and within a poem, you know, they often shift from past to present to future, and there's some quantum energy in there and changing forms. So in one of the poems, a buffalo and a bird rearrange their atoms, and in another, you know, I think you talked about, you already mentioned it, that, you know, everything a character draws with his pencil becomes real. So yeah, thinking of it in that way, I guess I'm probably not specifically interested in how the world is created, but in kind of different dimensions, different ways of seeing the world, and kind of how humans get by in that world. And yeah, the concept of these multiple dimensions and thin places, I think that's interesting. So yeah, it's almost as if the poems are kind of taking place in a third space in time. It's not reality and it's not unreality, it's somewhere else. So my poems have been described as occupying this liminal space, which is on this boundary almost of states of being, and the poems have this magical realist surrealist style. So it's magical realist in that it's a realistic setting, but there's these fantastical elements that seem normal.
So if you're just tuning in, that was Frances Samuel talking about Museum, her new poetry collection. And after this track from PHF, we're going to be lucky enough to listen to Frances do a reading from the collection.
95BFM's Art Bank.
That was Sabbath Shirt by PHF. And now we're going to jump into a reading from Francis Samuel's new collection, Museum. And Museum has just come out from Te Haranga Waka University Press, and it is available at all good bookstores.
Poem here I'm going to read called Essential Tremor. And essential tremor is actually the name of a medical condition that I read about when I was reading about Charles Schultz, who does the, you know, the Peanuts and Charlie Brown cartoons. And the article I was reading from, you know, was saying that he had this condition, essential tremor, which made his hand shake when he used a pen. So if you look really closely at, not even that closely, but at, you know, the Charlie Brown comics, you can see these wavy lines. So that interested me, and that was kind of the starting point for the poem. And then the other side of it was that I was writing for this, the New To Tile exhibition for the for a space in there, which had this tsunami tank, which simulated how a tsunami wave moves. Essential tremor. Your hand shakes when you try to hold it still. They say that's how your drawings talk about both physical and existential pain. In the meantime, I'm writing about volcanoes, earthquakes, tsunami. The mechanical wave in the tank hits the shore, and some people, standing with a horse in the city, get washed over and over. The longer you look through the glass, the more it feels like it is you getting wet. It doesn't help that Taniwha are carrying their fire through the underworld to warm you. Even if the fire found a way to ride the horse, or the horse found a way to ride the fire, that wave would keep coming. So it's better you are now inside the glass rather than outside looking in, because inside the glass box of the museum, the idea is that everything we love survives.
Oh, that's a lovely poem to read. Thank you so much.
You know, you're asking how my title kind of captured the collection, and I think, you know, there's that last line there about, you know, museums as being, you know, the kaitiaki, so they're guardians of these objects and their stories, and, you know, they're looking after them in such a way that they survive. And I think there is a theme of kind of resilience coming through in the poems, and, resilience, and also I think transformation. Like, there are a number of the poems, it's like a character or something, it's almost like it's reaching, there's a limit, but then they sort of transcend that limit. So at the end of some of the poems, you know, things rise up, or, you know, they split open, or a character starts singing.
You're listening to Art Bank on 95 BFM.